Please stand for the pledge. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Please remain standing for a moment of silence. Thank you. Okay, good evening, everyone. Welcome. We're going to start off the board meeting tonight with our superintendent's report by Dr. Graham.
Good evening. I'm not going to steal the thunder from Nicholas or Kaylee. So the one thing that I just wanted to mention is that this Saturday, our marching band has a home competition at Sachem East. I think it's at 2 o'clock. It's a little earlier than 2 o'clock. 2 o'clock's when the awards are presented. But I invite all of you to come out and check out the Sachem marching band in their home show. It's a phenomenal presentation. So I'm going to turn it over to Kaylee and Nicholas at this point. One of the things that I did want to mention is Nicholas is a part of our Sachem North League champs in cross country. They just won yesterday, I think it was. Mm-hmm. So congratulations, Nicholas. Thank you. And why don't you provide us with an update for Sachem North, Nicholas.
Good evening, everyone. I wanted to start off this report by informing you that our homecoming weekend was really great this year. On Friday the 21st, we had around 800 students attend our Mardi Gras homecoming dance. And the next day, before the homecoming game, we had a student-organized carnival, which was a great little success. It was the first year we did it, and it's definitely going to be a repeated tradition because so many people enjoyed it. All clubs made a game for the carnival and had fundraisers for everyone to take a part in, and it was really a great kickoff to the homecoming game. During the game, we won. We against Pat Med in a fairy tale fashion. It was a field goal in double overtime. It was great. Everyone was super hyped. It was a lot of fun. It's safe to say North had a successful homecoming weekend. In more recent terms, Sachem North sports have been doing great. Our boys volleyball team is undefeated at 10-0 currently and are ranked number one in the county. Our boys cross country team, as you may have just been informed, won a league title yesterday, and we were undefeated 6-0 in our league. The boys soccer team just secured their spot in the playoffs, and our girls tennis team clinched a position in counties following their conference match this past Friday. The Sachem North Club Fair went well, and many of the clubs, including class governments and the STEM club, have already had multiple meetings. The senior class government has already ran some great events, such as Senior Sunrise and the 9th Period Breast Cancer Walk, which was today at the track. The STEM Club had a cool DIY project rocket, where they made and tested rockets during one of their 9th Period meetings. Student government had a meeting yesterday discussing fundraising opportunities for the food drive. This year for the food drive, we're trying a new method of food collection. We're running something we call 6 weeks of giving. Each week from now until Thanksgiving, which is crazy to think there's only 6 weeks then, we have a specific item we need for food drive that we encourage our students to bring into their homerooms, and at the end of each week, we collect and count the items to see whose homeroom had the most donations. Whoever did will receive a bagel breakfast. This week's item was stuffing. This system makes it a lot easier for students to focus on one item, because instead of having an entire grocery list, they only have to get one thing. North is having a great year so far, and I couldn't be prouder to be a Sachem student. Thank you all for listening.
So East also had our second student government meeting yesterday, and we were talking about our homecoming and Spirit Week, which is starting on Monday. For the homecoming, we have a carnival beforehand, which we're really excited for. Student government got a video game bus from the U.S. Army, so they're coming for that. So that's going to be really cool. And we're actually already starting the food drive, and at the homecoming, we're asking for parents and students, whatever, to bring a donation like as you walk into the game, just to start that a little bit earlier. And we also have a student, Liz Reimer, who is heading the pet drive, so that's also exciting. So any pet donations can also be brought to that. And then I'm sure we've all been noticing some of the common themes the past few board meetings, and I just think it's important to hear a student's perspective because we're there every day experiencing them firsthand. So as a student, I really appreciate all the things that are being done to make Sachem a more cohesive community, such as Dr. Graham's roundtable discussions with students, and it was the board that added the carnival to the homecoming. It wasn't the Sachem students. And thankfully, it started to cool down, so the classrooms are much more comfortable, so no more 95-degree days. And I can honestly and truthfully say that I'm really proud of the improvements our district has been making in the past year. In the morning, you can obviously tell there's an increased security presence, and I think everyone has been starting to feel much safer and more secure. So I'd just like to thank the administration, because from firsthand experience, I'm telling you they're doing everything in their power and really addressing all the concerns brought up at these meetings. Thank you.
Also, going further with what Kaylee said, I definitely agree. I think that the increased security presence and security procedures has been, very noticeable. And as a student, I feel much safer this year as the year prior. So thank you.
Thank you, Nicholas and Kaylee. I swear I didn't read what they were going to say before. I had no knowledge. I thank both of them for their honest feedback on what's happening in our schools. And I think certainly the fact that they're sitting up on this dais and sharing with all of you the student perspective, that's something that we've been focusing on, and student voice, student perspective, and helping some of that drive our decisions moving forward. So thank you to the both of them. To follow that, and I think that's a tough act to follow, we're going to invite our external auditors from EFPR up to present the audit and the 17-18 financials.
Good evening, everyone. Normally, we do get to follow tough acts, so we're kind of used to that. I just have a few things to say, and then I'm going to turn it over to my colleague, Brent Jensen, to do the bulk of the presentation. We are happy to have continue to be retained as the external auditors. I know we went through an RFP process last year, so we're happy to be back in place as the external auditors. An audit is a process. You're going to see the end of the process, but the process really started over in the late spring, where we did a lot of planning internally. We met with the audit committee in May to talk about scopes and our risk assessment and things like that. We came out in July and actually did our testing primarily over the federal numbers. We came back in August and then really pretty much beat up the numbers at that point in time. And then met with the audit committee meeting last week to actually review the financial statements in full. And with that, I'll turn it over to Brent for the balance.
Okay. All of you should have a little one-page handout of board summary in front of you. I intend to pretty much stick to that item right there. To the extent that there's any questions about anything else that's contained in the full, much larger report that you were given as part of your board package, I am more than willing to go through anything in there, explain anything, but I don't think that that's what all the public and everyone wants to hear tonight necessarily. So, as Joe mentioned, we went to the audit committee last week on October 4th and discussed in detail the financial statement with that committee. I believe that they have made the recommendation to you at this time. So we're just following up on that with the full board now. The opinions in the financial statement, both on the financials in accordance with generally accepted accounting principles and in accordance with the compliance with federal award programs, were both unmodified or clean opinions. That is really the best you get. There's really no positive assurance in our profession. In addition to that, there were no material weaknesses, no significant deficiencies, no other reportable items or findings in your report. So once again, that's about as good as you're going to get in terms of those types of items. The management here really was a pleasure for us to work with. Just as a evidence of the job that they do throughout the year, this, you are one of the larger governments we work with in terms of the total dollars flowing through your organization in a given year. And we started the final fieldwork portion of this audit the week of August 27th to have a turnaround of really about 6 weeks to be here in front of you with a report of this size with the scope of the numbers that we're working with is really a thing that tells you that you have the management in place to give us the information needed timely and in good order. And it's very much appreciated at our end, and you should really appreciate the management you have in place on the financial side of the district. Now to get into the actual numbers just a little bit here, the government-wide full accrual level statements this year, you show a loss of $16.7 million. What's important to know about that government-wide statement is that that loss is really being driven by a couple of actuarial estimate type items The much larger one is the other post-employment benefits, which are basically retiree health care costs that the district has to record the entire future expected payout on retiree health care today for all retirees currently and all active employees that are expected to retire from the district. There was a change in the way that was recorded within the past year that brought your liability in that area up from the $325 million that was previously on the books up to $683 million and drove the district to an overall deficit position of $432 million. What's really important to know is that that government-wide financial statement includes several long-term liability items that are not being funded now. It is not really the statement that is used to actually operate the district based on. It's not how you budget. It's just something that kind of lets the public know that these are future obligations the district is going to have to meet based on future revenues that will be earned to meet those. The much more important thing in the financial statements is your general fund. Your general fund has a positive change in the net position this year of $15.7 million. And within that change, you do have you have new reserves of $13.7 million. The state puts a 4% fund balance cap on all school districts, and that limits you to maintaining 4% unassigned fund balance against the next year's operating budget. You have that exactly that 4% number right now, and you've more than doubled your reserves from last year. I know a few years ago we were here talking to you, painting really a pretty grim picture at that time. It shows really a pretty impressive bounce back that you've had. You've had a little bit of good luck here and there to help, but you've also made some difficult decisions that have put you into a much better financial position. At this time, I would say you've kind of gotten the district back to level ground. You have your reserves mostly funded to where you'd want for some of the most important reserves. You have your fund balance back up to the 4%. You certainly haven't gotten to the point where you're beginning to appropriate fund balance yet, and there's other potential items such as capital reserves that are available to the district. I know that there was a period of time where there really was not money for capital items, so those types of things might be a consideration now. But I would say you, at this point, you at least have the district back onto level footing from a financial perspective and have the important financial items in place.
I'd just like to add that if you go back about 5 years or so and look at the numbers as they existed at that point in time, there's been a tremendous improvement in the amounts of fund balance that the district has had. And as Brent pointed out, it's mainly because of a lot of tough decisions that have been made along the way to get you to the point where, you are right at the 4% number that New York State mandates, and you've appropriately set aside, much-needed dollars in the reserves that are allowed, some of the reserves that are allowed under general municipal law. And so from that standpoint, you're doing everything that you need to do, both to, over this period of time, stabilize the district and provide for the future of the district accordingly.
Okay, we'll open it up to the board. Do any of the board members have any questions? I do. So, gentlemen, thank you for coming out, and thank you for meeting with us last week as well. So when you, Brent, when you went through everything as far as discussing the post-employment benefits liability, the Gatsby 75, since we went over this in detail last week, it's a lot to explain. But I don't want everyone sitting out there thinking that we have this huge deficit now. So we're not the only ones. It's all the other school districts in New York State as well. It's just how it's being reported now versus how it was reported prior, right?
Correct. The reality of it is that several years back, the Government Accounting Standards Board said you need to create a liability for these future retirement costs. And they said you're going to bring that liability on your books slowly over a 30-year period, which is where the $325 million that was there was coming from. But there was always a number disclosed on the financial statements as to what that full 30-year picture was going to be. that disclosed item that was not a recorded liability is effectively what you are recording as a liability now. And you were always using a 30-year trend to get to that number, and they just removed that trend rate and just said pick it up now, effectively.
Okay, so it's not just our school district. No. It's every other in New York State, and it's other municipalities as well, right?
Every municipality in the state, so that's any village, towns, cities, and school districts have to report this liability. You know, pretty much what has happened is that GASB, a number of years ago, decided that they wanted to get things that were formerly commitments and reflected and disclosed as commitments on the financial statements in terms of liabilities. So the first part of that was that initial other post-employment benefit liability that was recorded, and they gave you 30 years to true up that accrual. Then a couple of years ago, they went through and said, okay, we've got all these defined benefit pension plans in New York State for municipal employees. Now New York State is funded far better than most other states, but there's a net liability of that pension that needs to be drilled into the financial statements. They then went through and said, okay, we should have never had this 30-year phase-in period for the other post-employment benefits. Let's close that door. A couple of years from now, they're going to actually take lease accounting off the books, and so there'll be no more operating leases. So things like copiers, things that we would normally, you know, lease on a more than 1 year basis, they actually are going to want a liability recorded for those. Basically, well, those full accrual financial statements, when you look at them, have all of the negatives associated with them because they reflect the bonds, which are true liabilities, and then all of these other things without any of the resources that are actually earned on an annual basis through your budget process that fund those on an annual basis. And so when you look at those top full accrual financial statements, the position is kind of muddy because of that, which is why we always go back to the fund statements, because the general fund is showing a strong position, and that is how, in fact, you operate the district.
Okay, and just one more thing. When you state in here that there were no material weaknesses or significant deficiencies, what exactly does that mean as far as the external audit?
So material weaknesses and significant deficiencies deal with internal control. You have certain systems of internal control that have to be relied upon to make sure that transactions are not happening in a fraudulent manner, in an erroneous manner, anything like that. And we do certain population testing on various different control systems throughout the district to identify potential weaknesses in these controls. And there's different levels within our professional standards that they fall into, either significant deficiencies or the more serious nature of material weaknesses. So effectively, if we were finding any control weaknesses throughout the district, they would be potentially items that would be reported in those categories.
And there was nothing reported?
Nothing reported.
Yeah. Basically, as Brent pointed out, we do not audit internal controls per se. We basically obtain an understanding of the internal controls for the sole purpose of rendering an opinion on the financial statements. Having said that, though, we are required to go through and evaluate the internal controls. We do walkthroughs of key controls to ensure ourselves that what we're hearing is in place, we're actually seeing in place. And we do some control testing and other testing to assure ourselves that the controls that we've been told are actually in place. Having said that, a material weakness would be something that would be so significant that it's more than likely it would result in a material issue in the financial statements, whereas a significant deficiency is it would take more than one significant deficiency to significantly impair the financial statements.
So. Okay. All right. Thank you. Does anyone else have any questions? No? All right. Gentlemen, thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you to Joe and Brent and the work that you did, and certainly thank you to Mr. O'Keefe and his staff for facilitating that process from the district standpoint. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Now we're going to switch gears I think Ms. Hines was clapping because she's going to get to present now. We are going to switch gears, and we have another presentation to the Board of Ed from Ms. Hines, along with Danielle Moran and Maria O'Doherty. And this is going to be a presentation on some of the curriculum initiatives that have taken place throughout the district. And this is, I think, a 32,000-foot view of some of the things that are taking place throughout our district. And we'll continue to drill into those throughout the course of this school year and on upcoming school years.
So, again, I just want to thank Marie and Danielle for being here. I know that they might be a little bit of newer faces for me, only being here a year and a half, but they are wise colleagues that have been here for quite a number of years. And they are a huge support to my office in making sure that all these initiatives roll out efficiently in our districts, helping our principals and our teachers. So as we did last year, we just wanted to come in and talk a little bit about the overall work that we're doing in our district. So I'm just going to start very simply. I'm not going to read down every single thing, but when I first started here, a major goal that I talked with Dr. Graham was to do an audit of all the programs and to just kind of see what was going on curriculum instruction-wise here in our district in conjunction with the goals that we were looking to achieve through our board. So in talking with our administrators, our teachers, obviously groups, not every single person, our student groups, from, I attended all of the student roundtables. These were the beliefs that we had come up with in order to really up the game for what we wanted to be able to achieve for our students. So mastery versus any coverage, making sure that students really understand what they're learning as opposed to just going through our curriculum. Teachers should have more autonomy. One thing that I noticed very quickly was that, especially on the elementary level, a lot of our teachers were feeling very boxed in by the programs that we had. So we wanted to really make sure that there was more breadth in that, and making sure that teachers have the ability to pace themselves according to the needs of the student, not necessarily a boxed program that was in front of them. We also wanted to make sure that the data points that we were collecting, we were collecting a whole lot of data points, but not really looking at any of them. So we wanted to make sure that we were looking at the right ones to really gauge the progress of our students and making sure that our kids were leaving our elementary school, going into the middle school adequately on grade level, and then so on into the high school. Collaboration, students unpacking their own learning, more students having equal access to higher order classes, and then finally being able to afford our students the ability to show what they know in many ways past just the paper and pencil test. So the overview for last year, again, looking at our CCHM data that we collected through our math and literacy benchmarks, we decided that we were going to move more towards what many high-performing school districts are doing, moving more towards a math workshop, which is very similar to what our literacy workshop is in the elementary school. We began our first steps towards our unit creation as a resource for our curriculum. Our curriculum has not changed, but the way that we want to teach it is changing. And we also started intense professional development around the next generation learning standards, and just making sure that everybody felt comfortable with the new practices and what we were looking to do. Obviously, this is a big shift for us, so we would expect that this will take a few years. In your folders is actually a transition plan timeline that just kind of talks about the steps that we're taking, as well as some samples of our units. We also started to expand our guided reading. We really wanted to make sure that not just some of the kids were being met in small group instruction, but all of the kids K-5. We also started to incorporate making sure that our E&L staff were trained around guided reading. Again, this is not something you learn overnight. This is a process. I'm very proud of all their hard efforts and what they're doing to move forward. We started the initial trainings around project-based learning. I'm happy to say that we've been actually asked quite a few times from our school district here to present. We just presented at LAACD on Friday with folks from Linwood Avenue Elementary School, and it was pretty cool to see just in 1 year some small steps that some very brave volunteer teachers are doing at the elementary level. Tri-State Consortium, Dr. Graham and myself went around to all of the faculty meetings and then into smaller meetings where necessary to just kind of talk about what Tri-State was, membership benefits, which really afforded us multiple opportunities around professional development. We have many teachers and many principals that are going and visiting other school districts to experience the best practices around what they're doing and or help them collaborate on issues that we're having. Data teams. We brought a district data team back and revived that to really look at, again, through the wisdom of the board, Dr. Graham, the rest of the cabinet. My position went from K-5 to K-12. So anytime that we make a decision, it is not for one small group. It is for all of the kids in our district. And I just want to go back for a second, if you don't mind, this first one. I constantly keep saying over and over again that curriculum instruction is not for just general ed.
It is for special ed, it is for ENL, it is for all the students that we have. So when we make decisions, we really want to make sure that we are making them for everyone. We also started looking at a wellness committee. We created a transition meeting, which Ms. O'Doherty is going to talk about a little bit later on. This is where we met on every single fifth grade student going into sixth grade to make sure that we weren't just looking at them academically, but also socially. Who are they? What's their life like? What do we need to do for them to be successful as they transition into the secondary schools? Science, we started peeking at, very lightly, the next generation learning standards because it does match up to PBL. And our science folks at the secondary school were very open to us starting to look at that as that really kind of marries it, I think, you know, the best. We took out the flex periods and we brought in an exploratory program, and I'm happy to say, and Dr. Mack can speak to this probably the best because he's been to every single one of the classes already, that program is really swimming along and they're actually engaging in project-based learning training next week. So we're super excited about that. 18-19 overview is just what are our next steps? We're not looking to make drastic changes, but baby steps towards the changes that we've identified. So again, our focus on whole child education and being able to draft key essential skills and qualities that we want all kids to have. So not necessarily coming up with lessons for teachers to teach, but what are some cool things that we're doing in the district that really zero in on crafting a child academically and socially. And so for those of us that know the success of our challenge day at the high school, Mr. Chiaramonte is coming down and has created with us at the elementary school, our middle school principals and their social and emotional team, Project Kindness. And so this is going to be a really cool project that our sixth graders are going to go through for a full day to kind of take some of the important things that Mr. Chiaramonte does up at the high school and bring it down to the middle school level. So we're super excited about that. We're also going to start grade 8 transition meetings. So just like what we did for fifth grade, we're going to start doing for every single eighth grader going into the high school. And we're in the process of drafting that out right now, but it looks something like we would like to try and start creating like an informal graduation plan so kids take more accountability of where they're going and what they want to do when they get into high school. And so that would mean creating visuals for parents and being able to really up the ante for our curriculum mix. We're also going to look at them academically and who they are socially again. So to be determined and share with you how that goes, but hopefully just as well. Math workshop. Again, we're in our first year of really just, you know, now that we've sort of drafted our units, pulling together resources, purchasing things that we think work well for us. We do still have, Pearson was the resource that we were using for our curriculum. Teachers that wanted it still have access to pieces of that. We actually, the principals and I decided this morning that we were going to ask one last time just to make sure that everybody's comfortable as we move forward this year to ensure that as you're learning something, obviously, it's always a heavy load. It's a heavy weight. There's a lot to do. There's not that much that you can do in terms of taking away, learning about new lessons and what have you, but we're really working with the union to make sure that we're moving forward with that. So I appreciate that from the SCTA. Literacy training, small group instruction, we're moving that up into the middle schools now. We are actually working with our sixth grade teachers, looking at the benchmark levels and making sure that all the kids that are not reading on grade level are being met with in some small group instruction style that we feel is going to best suit sixth grade. So it's not going to look exactly like what happens in elementary school. We don't have classrooms of, you know, 25 students. We have classrooms that, well, not classrooms, but case loads where teachers are responsible for 60-some-odd students. Project-based learning and flipped classroom. We've already started this work as well. This is going to primarily focus on our secondary buildings because their content really is what content is. It's more about what we're looking to achieve instructional practice-wise. And so just talking with the departments last year, these two items were something that were of interest, and we're happy to bring it so that they can learn a little bit more about it and try it out here and there. Tri-State Consortium, again, we're expanding our membership opportunities. Google Suite, we are looking for ways to, again, break the bridge of miscommunication because of that old adage, we're just so large. So we're looking at Google to really use it as a forum for us to communicate everything around instruction. So right now, Jack and his team, Mr. Renda, are working diligently to make sure that we have team drives on Google. We're putting everything from our professional development calendars in there, our newly created curriculum that we're putting in there, anything that we have that we're also putting in there. And so right now we're working out the kinks, but eventually that will be our major form for all communication for instruction. And then lastly, expanding on equity, so really larger access for our students. We're starting to have talks around grade 8 science and math and advanced placement. Okay, I'm going to turn it over and ask you this morning.
I'm just going to elaborate a little bit on what Erin had shared a little while ago. But we're really making a shift in our instructional practices when it comes to mathematics. We didn't want to just continue to cover standards just to say we've covered them, but really give students the opportunity to engage deeply in the concepts and that we know are in the standards. The new next generation math standards are more explicit with their examples, their language, giving us more opportunity to really meet the needs of our students. And when we think about the framework for rigor, and we want to take students through that process of deep conceptual understanding and be able to be fluent in mathematics and then be able to apply mathematics, we want to give them those opportunities. And if we don't have that deep conceptual understanding at first, it will limit them on their road or their path to being able to apply mathematics.
Very simply stated, that's where you see students going up to sixth grade, so counting on their fingers and toes. We'd like to not have that.
We'd like to not have that. So really, we're really encouraging our teachers and providing them with more manipulatives, more instructional practices. We are working with someone for professional development and really engaging conversations about the content and each grade level for our teachers, which obviously will transpire into the classroom and having better experiences for our students. We're talking about this. Deep conceptual understanding, fluency, and application all through K-12, so for that vertical conversation and really thinking deeply about our own practices and how we can obviously improve the experiences for our students, produce more mathematically competent students, flexible thinkers. I think when we think about science and math and, you know, project-based learning and STEM, we really need to raise problem solvers. And really deep thinkers about mathematics.
Thank you. Just to add that too, the math departments up at the high school are experiencing PD on flipped classroom, because again, their content really isn't shifting. It's more what they're interested in changing around their practices. Okay, so again, this was just a very quick scene of what we're looking to build Google Team Drive-wise, and for anybody wanting to know a little bit more about it, we'd be happy to chat with you at some point. Project-based learning, these are just the key skills. Again, a lot of these key skills are the things that, you know, it's funny, when we had our new teacher workshop, we had asked our new teachers, what do you think the most important thing is for our students to know by the time they leave us? And every single answer had to do with some sort of 21st century skill. They need to be able to collaborate. They need to be able to work with others. They need to be able to make decisions. They need to be able to have stamina. They need to be able to be resilient. Nobody said they need to have 100 on their blah-bitty blah. And it's not that we're saying the content isn't important, but when you are deeply engaged in instruction like that, where you're working with all these key skills, you've got to remember the content. And so we're just trying to flip that around a little bit. Professional development, we just have here again some opportunities of how we offer professional development. As you know, we have our 4 PDP opportunities throughout the year for our staff, for our teachers rather. We also offered a summer institute around the new math units to just offer people who wanted to come in voluntary, wanted to check it out and see what it was like ahead of time. We also have grade and department meetings. I'm actually starting, I think, Friday's my first grade level meeting where I'll be going to every single elementary school and meeting with every grade level just to hear feedback around the new work and anything else we could do to support them. We also had our second administrative retreat this year at Teacham Library. It's been absolutely wonderful, and they have supported us in our goal development for the year using technology, you know, again. And we have our second superintendent's conference day since I've been here, where we're expanding on that ed camp style. So there will be some opportunities for teachers to kind of work on district initiatives, and then we have a plethora of open sessions of things that our teachers, TAs, everybody else in our district want to work on. So everything from flipped classrooms to project-based learning to yoga and meditation practices to, you know, just everything under the sun. So we're super excited about that. And I'd like to add that most of those open sessions are being run by our volunteer teaching staff.
I've been in the district 14 years. I don't think I've ever been as excited about data as I have been in the last few years. But I think that some of the work we've done around the grade 5 to 6 transition team meetings have been really exciting and an important part of our district moving forward. For the first time ever, we have sat down with each elementary school and our middle school sent teams down to sit and talk about each fifth grade student, not only their academics, but their social and emotional well-being as well. And some of the documents up there, we had we asked our teachers to input information into eSchool, but we never really used it in a way that was beneficial to helping the teachers in terms of their instruction immediately, as well as passing that information along to our middle school. Some of what I'm not able to show you is a new literacy dashboard. I'm very excited about this work. Our BOCES staff developer has been able to help us take our literacy data for students across 3 points in the school year. And what we used to do is turn it around. It would probably take us 2 months to process these reports. And through our literacy staff developer, we've been able to turn it around in 2 weeks. So in terms of how teachers are able to use that information to better inform their instruction, that's been a huge, significant change for us. And that's another example of what we're calling our student at a glance report. We've been able to take all the information on our current sixth grade students and share it with our middle school students that found that information very helpful in terms of how did they do academically, but also their attendance and their home situation in terms of supporting those students in the best way possible. We were at one of our middle schools the other day sharing this information, and the seventh and eighth grade teacher says, well, how about us? We would like our reports as well. So the teachers are asking for the information. We know that they deem it to be valuable. So that's some of the work that's happening in our fifth to sixth grade transition teams, and we hope to move that to eighth to ninth grade as well.
As Erin mentioned before, we are moving towards the new New York State Science Learning Standards. We have not implemented them yet. However, we are preparing to do that, thinking about the instructional shift that will be involved in these new standards. When we think of project-based learning, it kind of fits right along with it. We're seeing that those instructional shifts that they are mandating are really that inquiry-based, hands-on science, student-centered. So really, we're preparing to move that way in the future, not this year. Our secondary science departments are actually working on looking at those standards now and trying to make some of those small instructional shifts that will be expected in those standards. So it's a nice beginning for all of us, getting our feedback. And then,
just a little visual again of Tri-State and why it is so important for us. So we really do appreciate the support of the board for this. It has been a tremendous professional experience for those that have gone to just see how other high-performing school districts relate. And then the last piece.
So Erin touched on this as well, but in terms of social emotional wellness, we know that students who come to school, if they're feeling anxious or they have other issues that they're dealing with, well, they're not prepared to learn. And for those of you who are aware, New York State also put out some guidelines and frameworks this summer dealing with social emotional wellness of students. But honestly, I feel like SACHM has always supported our students in this way, but we're hoping to develop a little bit more organized curriculum so that students across all of our grade levels, as Erin mentioned, our gen ed students, our special ed students, and our ENL students all feel supported and safe when they come into our SACHM school. And have a very successful challenge event at the high schools, which is being brought down to the middle schools this year. Our elementary teachers as well. As Erin mentioned, we don't really want to purchase a CAN program. We're going to look at the best of what is offered out there and develop our own organically grown social and emotional curriculum guidelines that support all of our students.
So, with that all said, does anybody have any questions or comments?
Okay, we'll open up to the board. Does anybody have any questions? Erin, I just have a quick question. As far as in the beginning you had mentioned, let me just go back. You had mentioned as far as the teachers that they have flexibility now based on the needs of the students in front of them as far as the pace of the curriculum. So how does that work when you have, say, one teacher in one classroom that is at a faster pace than a teacher in another classroom? I guess at the end they all have to get to a certain point, and how does that teacher kind of keep track on where they need to be with that curriculum by the time they get to the end of the year?
Well, they have pacing guides, right? So within our new units, our pacing guides are embedded, if we're talking about the math unit, let's say. But we really do believe in teachers having more autonomy based on the needs of the students in front of them. Because if you think about it logically, if the kid's not ready to move on, yet we're still moving on and teaching them something, then what are they actually learning? I would rather know, and I keep saying this ad nauseum, and I know it sounds crazy, but we really do believe it. We would rather the pace be slower and the students understand 100%, 70% of the curriculum than 10% little pieces of whatever they were able to sort of remember by the end of the year. And I think that when you have teaching like that, that is a big shift. And for us, because we are so large, it's doubly a big shift. And so you want to make sure that people feel supported in that, you take your time, and so like anything, there's bumps in the road when you first start. You work through it together. But at the end of the day, the pacing shouldn't be about whether or not I'm on the same page as you. It's how much did my kids exceed and how much did they learn out of my year. And so when we crafted these units, what we did was instead of just, again, taking a program and just throwing each chapter in, we really looked at the New York State Learning Standards, our curriculum, and said, what are the big ideas at the end of each grade level? What do we want kids to accomplish by the end of math in kindergarten, first grade? And then we worked our way backwards. So instead of having 16 chapters, we now have 6 smaller, condensed, big idea chapters that allow teachers to really spiral, take the time. And once everybody feels comfortable around it, we've worked with it, we feel very heavily that we'll see better results for our students.
Anyone else? Meredith?
It's more of a comment and not a question, but I just want to compliment all the hard work that you guys have put in on this. And I love the fact that you're including everybody. I think for far too long we've always kind of focused on this group or that group, and having everybody included is pretty special. You know where I'm coming from on that one. And I fully agree with the fact of us trying to organically do everything here rather than purchase what somebody else has done. One, for the money savings, you know I'm all about that. And two, because I just feel like Sachem has so much to offer. We always do. And bringing Sachem all together and united and really getting that spirit going, I think is what will help make the kids, you know, even the kids who don't want to go to school are going to start to want to go to school, and that's pretty impressive on your part. Thank you, ladies.
Okay. Thank you very much. Very good presentation. Thank you.
I wanted to just, one, thank Erin, Danielle, and Marie, and certainly all of the administrators and the teaching staff who and all of our classroom professionals who dedicate their time to this work. And I think we have to be very careful when we talk about changes. Change doesn't imply that everything that we've been doing is wrong and therefore we need to stop doing those things and move ahead or move in a different direction. We have a lot of amazing things that are going on in this district, and we have for a very long time. We want to build on those strengths and continue to bring in pieces that will enhance that. And so I think that as Erin and her team approaches this work, you know, she said early on in the presentation that she's conducted an audit of our elementary curriculum, of our secondary curriculum. And she's been ever present and in every single meeting assessing these things and seeing where our strengths, where our weaknesses are, and how can we do things differently to complement some of those strengths. And when there are weaknesses, how do we improve those weaknesses? So it's not a what we were doing is bad and we need to do something different that will be good. It's how do we take what we've always had that's been good here, continue to get better in that area, and then things where we've had weaknesses, how do we make those and turn those into strengths? So thank you, Erin and Danielle Marie, for your efforts in those areas.
Okay. So now we're back to the agenda. 161, approval of the minutes. I need a motion. Bill, second. Meredith? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Okay, next is the visitors section. Any visitors that are here that have any, want to address anything to the board on matters relating to the agenda can come up. Otherwise, if anyone else is a visitor, we take it at the end if it's not due to the agenda. Allison, is that relating to the agenda? Okay. Okay, Joan O'Connell.
Hi.
Need to push this. Hi. When we're talking about the curriculum changes, and you're talking about maybe slowing down the pace with the math, but what about the kids who are advanced, gifted, you know, would be in honors once they're in high school?
Hi, Mrs. O'Connell. I hope you're going to join council again this year.
Yes.
It was nice having you.
I'll be there.
So that's a great question, right? The whole reason why, I wouldn't say we're slowing down the pace just because we are only caring about a certain portion. We're wanting to make sure that all of the strengths and needs of the students are being realized. So that's why we're moving more towards the math workshop, which is where there's some direct instruction, and then there's some small group instruction when our staff is ready for that. To really focus on the kids who might need more support because they're just not getting that particular area, or kids that need to be challenged and pushed further. We're also trying to incorporate things like technology sites, math manipulative games, projects, everything else. Again, this is very early steps for us, but that's why we're making the shift.
Very early. But I know that the gifted kids haven't had a lot for a while in the elementary and so forth. I mean, I'm pretty lucky. My son is pretty smart. You know, he's in honors. He's in AP classes. You know, he's in 10th grade. But in elementary school, he did a lot of being bored. You know, that's quite frankly what occurred. And I just want to make sure we're taking care of that as we're moving forward.
I think one of the focus areas for us as we refine our curriculum at the elementary levels and we look to make upper-level courses more accessible for those students who choose to take advantage of that opportunity when they get to the secondary schools is you have to make sure that you're challenging all students at their appropriate level at the elementaries, right? So that means for every single student, you're challenging them. That's a tall task for a classroom teacher. Even in a group of students that is homogeneously grouped, we know that in a homogeneous class, there are, if you have 20 students in that class, there are 20 different ability levels. And so that becomes even more of a challenge in a heterogeneously grouped class of students where you have 20 students that are very different. And that would be the work that we continue to do with our teaching staff, also with our curriculum, so that we make sure that we're appropriately challenging all of our students.
It's a very difficult thing. I just want to make sure we don't forget them.
I invite you to come to our next board meeting. We're going to be presenting the academic data from the 2017-18 school year.
Great.
And we're also going to be honoring, I think it's close to 125 students who earned recognition from the AP for their performance on AP exams, which is tremendous. So I think we have some good evidence that we're continuing to meet their needs as well.
Oh, no. Once he got into seventh grade, my son, there was the things for him. There was honors classes for him to take, and he was able to, you know, do things at a little bit of a higher level. It's prior to that, and I know it's hard. You had a classroom with, you know, 20, 25 children, and they were all at different levels and different things. I definitely recognize it's difficult.
Thanks. Ms. O'Connell, thank you. Okay. Any other visitors, Allison? Okay, back to the agenda. We're on page 2. Consent agenda for business items 3A1 through 3B2. I need a motion. Mike, second. Bill, any questions? All in favor? Opposed? Motion carried. Okay, we're on page 3. Personnel items, consent agenda for personnel items 4A1 through 4D10. I need a motion. Mike, second. Meredith, any questions? I just have a quick question. As far as there's a lot on here about the clubs through these personnel people being appointed. So do we have an estimate right now as far as how many clubs in each building?
Yes. I just want to remind the board that last year you had asked to make sure that we really expanded our students' ability to sort of pick and choose some of the clubs that maybe they wanted to retire or they did like. So we did decide to move forward with board approving the ones that we definitely know the kids were excited about earlier on at the end of last year. And then so these are the last and or any changes to advisors due to whatever personal reasons why people were making changes. But at each high school, we have anywhere from 35 to 39 clubs, including our honor societies.
Okay. Thank you, Erin. All right. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Okay. That takes us to page 20. Okay. We're moving on to action items. Consent agenda for action items 511 through 512. I need a motion. Bill, second. Meredith? Oh, 5112, I'm sorry. Motion we had from Bill, second motion from Meredith. Any questions? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. I just wanted to make a note. I don't know if Nicholas Fucci is here tonight. No, Nicholas Fucci has volunteered to be on our budget advisory committee, so we just want to thank him for volunteering. Okay, that takes us to page 23. Sure, go ahead, Mary.
There were other applicants for the budget advisory. We just didn't get them in fast enough to be taken care of tonight, so they'll be taken care of on the next.
Okay, thank you. So on page 23, we have 521, which is a donation from Cayuga Elementary in the amount of $10,000 for BOCES Performing Arts. I need a motion. Mike, second. Sarah? Any questions? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Mm-hmm. Motion carried. Okay, that takes us to financial consent agenda for items 531 through 535. I need a motion. Bill, second. Sarah, any questions? John, if you could just go over briefly 531 as far as the tax levy.
Sure. And that is, you know, one of the things during the budget cycle that is rather confusing to most people. When the voters go to the polls, they approve a budget. So this past May, the voters approved a budget of $322 million, and that budget is supported by a levy of $187 million. The balance of the budget is supported by state aid and then other miscellaneous revenues. So that $187 is the only piece of their tax bill that they actually have any control over. How it's apportioned to them is decided by the assessor's office. Now, the difficulty here in Sachem is you have three different municipalities with three different methodologies of taxing properties. So a couple of weeks ago, we get reports from each of the entities, from Brookhaven, from Islip, and from Smithtown, telling us what their assessed property values are. And it's hard to conceptualize, but just for example, we all realize that Brookhaven is the biggest component of our district. But when they give us our number, they say there's $57 million, whatever that number means. But by contrast, Islip tells us the number's $378 million. So you can see there's a great disparity in how the numbers come to us. So the state has a formula which they provide to us, which in theory takes these assessed valuations and turns them into what they believe them to be market valuations. These are called your equalization rates. So those rates are multiplied by those assessed values, so we come up with numbers that are somewhat consistent. And from that consistency, then we can apportion the levy, because we have $187 million. we need to know how much of it to send to each municipality. So once we multiply those assessed values by the equalization rate, we come out with, in theory, an approximate market value that's all based on the same number. We take that proportion. So as we typically would expect, Brookhaven is about 64% of the levy. Islip is about 32%, and then the balance goes to Smithtown. So that's how you get these breakdowns that are here. It's not something that the taxpayer has any control over of how much of the levy goes to each town. It's decided through these formulas that come down to us from the state. And, of course, then we pass this levy number along to the town, and then the town's assessor's office determines how that breaks down via their tax rate calculation to apportion the particular piece of the tax bill to each taxpayer. It's a little tough to conceptualize just by hearing it, but that's how it roughly breaks down. I don't know if that answered your question.
It did. Thank you. It's the same each year. We go through this process each year.
It's the same each year, yes.
Okay. Thank you. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Okay, that takes us to policy review on page 24. This is a policy review first reading. We don't need to take a motion on it, but does anyone have any questions? Any board members have any questions on it? Okay. If there is any questions, you can address any comments to Dr. Graham as well. Okay. That brings us to recommendations from the Committee on Special Education. I need a motion. Sarah? Second. Bill? Any questions? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Okay, that takes us to the monthly reports on page 25. 6A1, determinations from the Committee on Preschool Special Education. I need a motion. Meredith, second. Mike, any questions? No. All in favor? Opposed? Motion carried. Okay, that brings us to the Board of Education subcommittees. So the Legislative Committee, I can give an update on that. The Legislative Committee, we did meet. We had a meeting this year. We also have another meeting coming up on October 23rd. So we're going to still be addressing the Smart Schools bond as far as that $11 million that we haven't received yet. Dr. Graham did meet with some of our local representatives. I think it was, Dean Murray and Doug Smith? So Dr. Graham did get some more information. He relayed some of that to us. I believe Doug Smith might be coming to that meeting on October 23rd. So we're going to address that again with the Legislative Committee to just see how we would move forward, getting our group together and representing our school district in the right manner. So that's for the Legislative Committee. The advisory, the Audit Committee, we did have our meeting. And as you know, the auditors came out tonight and presented to you. So we don't have another meeting set right now. There's nothing really coming up for the Audit Committee except probably be in the springtime, I would think. Okay.
Ms. Roberts, are there any members of the Audit Committee in the audience here? This is usually the time of year where we would thank them as well, right?
Yep. Jeff is here.
Jeff and yourself. Certainly John for interfacing with the district and the auditors. But that's a lot of heavy lifting for that committee, so we thank them for their attention to that throughout the course of the school years. Thank you to the Audit Committee.
Thank you, Dr. Graham. Any updates with the Budget Advisory Committee, Meredith?
Nothing yet. We're still waiting for a few members to be approved, and hopefully a few more will volunteer. We do still need a few.
Okay, so if anyone's interested in joining, you can send an email to Allison, our district clerk. And then as far as the policy committee, Dr. Graham, do we have a date set up?
I was listening to your calendar, as you just said, that the legislative committee is on the 23rd. You're going to be busy that week because the 22nd is the policy committee meeting.
Okay.
That's our next policy committee, and at that time the board policy committee reviews sections of the policy and provides any updates as per the district, as per the law, and those are then put in front of the board for a first read, for a second read, and then for adoption. So the next meeting is the 22nd.
Okay, thank you. Okay, 2018-19 updates to the board. Then we have the board goals. Any board members have any comments about board goals? Nope. Okay, that brings us to page 26. We don't have any other presentations. And then as far as visitors, we do have one visitor. Allison, there's no other visitors? Okay. Nate Malfia or Malfa? Yeah. Nate Malfa. Thank you. Just make sure the green light is on for the microphone.
Hi. Mm-hmm. Thanks for your time today. I am here in regard to fundraising. And that problem I've had with fundraising for a couple of years now. I have a prepared statement, but I'll just wing it. This all, as all the parents in Sachem do, I know it's a necessary evil, fundraising, in the athletic department. And what I'm looking for is transparency, accountability. I've been asking for that for 2 years. I've had discussions with Dr. Graham. I've had discussions with the athletic directors. This all comes from my daughter's cheerleading activities. The way they fundraise itself. As all, I'm not here just for myself. There are other parents, but I'm the sacrificial lamb who comes to see you. There is a mandatory donations that they must get when they join cheerleading. And they have to get a certain amount of money brought in. This is not candy bar money, dollar or something like that. It's a minimum of $75 to $500 donations. They are asked to bring in, and it's mandatory. They must bring in at least $250 each. During these donations, they are asked to the businesses to sell ad space in journals, T-shirt stuff. My daughter sold $2,000 to $3,000 worth of donation ad space to various local businesses. During that time, one of the businesses came back and asked for the journal that she bought space in. We were told that there was no journal. The journal did not exist. They decided that it was not financially accessible right now. They didn't think it was worth the money. In hearing that, it was a local florist, tell you the truth, was very upset. She also got donations from various businesses, some $500 donations. I can name the people, but I don't think it's appropriate now. Thousands and thousands of dollars worth of donations, as all the other kids on the team did. I went to the coach and said, "Where is the journal?" And they said, "No, they don't have one." I said, "Well, then we have to tell the businesses and not getting a space that they, you know, when you ask for $500 donation, someone is asking for a decent space." There were no journals. She informed us that it was not feasible at this time to do it. And what happened was, in essence, she was blackballed because I made such a big deal about this. We went back to the businesses and offered them their, I said, we have to offer them their money back. They paid for stuff they're not getting. She told the team, if I were you, I wouldn't go back. Just let it go. Which was appalling to me. I personally went to all these businesses that my daughter got and offered them their money back, and they declined. But they said they wouldn't sponsor the team anymore. Businesses like Dave Oakley, Mr. Farmerville, gave a $500 donation. Cotton Coverage on Fortune Road, gave a $250 donation. Martino Physics, they're on Fortune Road also gave a $250 donation. I had to go to all these businesses and tell them they weren't getting what they paid for.
Excuse me. I'm sorry. There's a three-minute time limit.
Okay. Where am I? I don't know. The bottom line is my daughter was blackballed from the team and pretty much left the team. What I'm looking for is accountability, transparency. I've met with Dr. Graham. I've met with the athletic director. They had no idea about the fundraising. There was no parental supervision. We don't know. Many parents here have said, where's all this money go? No one knows. And I'm not saying anything about any other fundraising. I don't know. I'm not privy to any other fundraising. All I know is I have owned two businesses. I teach my daughter integrity in business. She's taking business now. She's leaving to graduating this year. It was very important to me that she do things the right way.
Okay. Sir,
I spoke to Dr. Graham, and he said it takes time. Now with this incident with this other coach who misappropriated funds, I get coming to me.
So what we can do at this point is Dr. Graham will follow up with you. Dr. Graham, you have his contact information?
I do, Mr. Malfa. And I think some of this is born, as you and I had spoken about,
yes,
out of the best of intentions when our district was struggling financially, that we continued to try to offer the best to the students in terms of athletics. I think this is primarily what we're talking about. And then we have a number of these booster clubs, which are not associated with the district or seemingly overlapping in many instances. And it's something that I did say that when we met, that I absolutely am addressing, and it is something that we are addressing and we continue to. So I certainly will follow up with you.
Like I said, this is going on for 2 years with me, between you and the – I understand it takes time.
Well, I think we met this summer.
We met this summer.
Yeah.
Correct.
Okay. So it does take time because, as I discussed, all of these things aren't clear. In other words, is it a parent group? Is it a school group? Is it, you know?
It just seems to me that it seems like a no-brainer. Why can't we have an oversight committee? Parents, no one knows anything about where the money goes. I'm not accusing.
Well, I mean, the simplest answer is the booster clubs are not affiliated with the school district, and nor should they be, and we shouldn't be overseeing them.
Fundraising is important. I understand that. I was just at a fundraiser. I support fundraising as long as it's
I'll follow up with you. Yep.
I mean, like I said, I've gotten that for 2 years now, and I'm still waiting.
Okay, sir, what he'll do is he'll follow up with you, and he has your contact information, so Dr. Graham will get in touch with the appropriate people and then follow up with you.
That's what I thought you would say.
Thank you very much for coming out tonight.
We'll see. Yes, I did.
Okay. Allison, any other visitors? Okay, that brings us to Board of Education as far as future agenda items. Does anyone on the board have anything for future discussion? Mike?
Yeah, just two quick things. The first thing, Dr. Graham, is the pep band. I know you mentioned the marching band has their thing going on this Saturday. Hopefully I get an opportunity to go up there. And
Sunday
it is. And I think we talked about maybe getting some volunteers from the marching band to show up at football games, if it's North or East games, and just give me 10 kids in the crowd that play the fight song so everybody can get fired up. So if that's something we could look at, I'd appreciate it.
Yep.
And then the bombshell. All right, the auditors were here, did a nice job. They talked about some very tough decisions that were made over the last few years, and tough decisions often follow poor decisions. So way back when they decided to split the district into North and East, I just talked to the student representatives next to me to ask them what their graduating classes were, and they both said, what did you say, Nicholas? You had given an exact number, 553?
546.
546, and I think East is probably a little bit higher, but not by much. And just so we don't find ourselves in a situation where there's a problem, where all of a sudden we have to close a school again, suddenly, we're pretty good at closing schools, Dr. Graham. We leased up Sequoia. We leased up Tecumseh. And I think it's because we're centrally located and it's easy for everybody to access us. So I just want to look into the future and take a look at what attendance is, because right now we're probably about, 1,100 people combined, students, and look into the future and see if there's a cost analysis that could be done to save the district money in putting us back to one, just a cost analysis. I'm not... It's okay to be prepared for these things. And this way, you know, 5 years down the road, everybody can take a look at, you know, this is not tomorrow, but 5 years down the road, it might make more sense to put us back together. I wouldn't even be opposed to talking to BOCES just to say, hey, you know, down the road, would you guys be looking for a high school? Doesn't hurt to be prepared. So before everybody gets all crazy, all right, it's just I want everybody's tax dollars to be well spent. This Miss O'Connell over here was talking about her son pretty good in math. And we have a lot of smart kids in this school. And when you can put a lot of smart kids in the same classroom, they're competitive. They're asking each other what they got on the grades. And when I run my auctions on real estate, I always use the phrase, competition creates value. So let's be competitive and let's create some value. Thank you.
Thank you, Mike.
So I think that's something we can explore. I know the board in the past has had a facilities committee, so maybe that's a way to go
about
some of that.
Just a cost analysis to see how much money it would save us. You know, I ran into an accountant friend of mine the other day. He retired. He's telling me about his house in West Palm Beach, his house at Okemo, and his house here. And I said, you're an accountant. You're probably carrying too much overhead, so it's not going to last that long. So
okay.
Thank you.
Anyone else? Meredith?
Just if we are going to look into that, does anybody know off the top of their heads, like, there was a reason why we had two schools to begin with? It was 9th and 10th, 11th and 12th. What could we house in one school comfortably?
This would be, I mean, if we're going to have this conversation, this would be a discussion item, you know, on a future agenda.
Yes.
Yeah, that's.
But
it's
I just want
to
be clear that,
all the information that
no matter what, we would still be split. Mm-hmm. You know, we wouldn't have
no.
a four-year.
Not necessarily.
No.
All right,
okay.
We could talk about this in the future.
I think that I think what Mr. Matlett was requesting was a cost analysis.
Yeah.
There are
Let's not put
probably
the
infinite
the
other factors that would go into account when you're looking at combining high schools. We know that our current kindergarten is somewhere in the order of 750 students district-wide, which is significantly smaller. We also know that instructional spaces in high schools are very different today than what they were in the 1990s, the 2000s, the 1980s. They are very different. So it might not be as simple as combining, but what I believe you had asked was just a rough cost analysis at this point, which certainly I think if we were to do that or begin to do that analysis, that would then have to be followed by a whole host of other analyses related to what does the space look like, what are the programs, what are the, you know, as I said, the infinite number of permutations that we'll have to look into.
Dr. Graham, exactly. If it's not going to save us any money, it's not worth looking any further. But if it's going to save the taxpayers a lot of money, it's something that you consider. It's an option.
So we can start talking about how to do that process.
Keyword, start talking.
Yeah.
Right.
All right, thank you.
Okay. Our next meeting is October 24th at 7:45. Why is it at 7:45?
There's a need for a very brief executive session prior to the meeting. So there'll be an executive session at 7:30, and then the regular meeting would begin at 7:45.
Okay. So our next meeting is October 24th at 7:45 here in the boardroom. Okay, I need a motion to go into exec. Sarah, Bill, second. I got it. Chris, motion to go into executive session for the purpose of discussing the employment of particular personnel, matters relating to the IEP of a particular student, legal advice relating to a particular matter pending in Supreme Court. All in favor? Opposed? Okay.
To shake things up.
Meeting is adjourned.